think of is grace and his mercy. And oh yeah, how he loves me. All I can do is thank him for blessing me. He shields me from the hurt and the pain. A touch from him and you will never be the same. Yes, I gotta thank him for saving me.
I thank him for my blessings every day that I wake up. We were born into this sin, but he decided to save us. Wasn't grateful for my life, but now I thank him every night. Because without him, I'd be lost. Now the problem has been solved. I remember all the lies and all the times that I disguised. But now his greatness and his mercy was revealed into my eyes. I'm so alive, I rose up from the dead survive. I cannot help but give him praise. You should come along for the ride.
All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Servant Leader Coaches Bible Study. I am your host, Coach Chelsea, and I'm super excited to open up this conversation right now. I tell you all the time, I try not to be biased, but these servant leaders that God keeps bringing through my path, I'm telling you right now, it's amazing. I was just talking to the servant leader before we got on today, and I was saying, I was trying to figure out how to kind of close out and walk into my maternity leave, walk into my nesting period before I welcome my first born, and she crossed my path. We have followed each other for a while. We've been talking. And as we talked, she just talked about her story. She talked about her path. And I knew that God has sent her my way. Today, we have servant leader Tamika Newman with us. She is a former athlete, a former coach of many years, an author, a leadership specialist, speaker, so many different things. But one of the things I can tell you is she's a powerful woman of God. And I know our conversation today is going to truly help someone, lift them, build them, and help them grow. So I thank you so much for being today. I tell people all the time, time is that one thing in life. No matter what we do, we can't give it back. So I thank you for your time. I'm a pass the torch to you to say hello to our listeners. I'm excited to get this conversation started. And then we're going to get this conversation started.
Thank you so much, Chelsea, for having me. You're right. I've been tuning into your podcast maybe for a year now. And it's a pleasure to be on. It really is. I can't even believe it. I want to pinch myself because of the servant leaders that you've had on and then all the value that you bring. I kind of look at my headphones like, am I hearing this? Like, you know, so much of it resonates with me, kind of fills me up, even gives me chills. I mean, I've cried, I've laughed. It's been amazing being a part of it. So to get on here, get the opportunity to speak, I'm a little bit nervous, but more honored than anything.
For sure. And let me tell you, even in your nerves, those gonna break in a few minutes. Cause I'm telling you, one of the blessings that I love about all of this, as we like approach a year and a half of this thing, is crazy to even say that. Like, I feel like we just started. Every day is new and every conversation is new. And I think that that's just God's way, right? That a person picks up the episode and just shuffles a certain episode and it ends up being the very thing they needed to hear.
Oh yeah.
When you and I were talking, and of course, naturally we connected, I was like, oh yeah, she has to be up here. There's no way. As much as you say that you're honored to be, I'm honored to have you and be able to be talking to you, you know? So to open this thing up, man, it's just to get this conversation started, set the tone a little bit, let our listeners know just kind of how you incorporate, how you dwell in the athletic path. Talk to us a little bit about you played two sports, volleyball, basketball. Right on that. Talk to us a little bit about that and how you jumped into the coaching game.
Awesome. So I'm from Houston. I'm a local girl, went to Prairie View for undergrad, went to Texas Southern. And I tell this story to kids all the time. My introduction was to sports was 1997. It was a Sunday because that's when the WNBA games came on.
Across
my screen, I saw these women, you know, running, being athletic, being technically sound. And I was like, what is that? And I was 12 years old. And it was basketball. And I had not seen women playing basketball as their job. The only person I saw playing basketball was my cousin, who was a couple years before me, played varsity basketball at the local high school. And so I was mesmerized that it was their job. It seemed so powerful. And I fell in love with basketball. And I said, I'm going to the WNBA. right? And so this is the year before middle school basketball. Picked up a basketball. My brothers used to go to a blacktop in our neighborhood. All of the local ballers would come from all over the city. And I would just go down there and hang out. And in between games, just shoot balls off the backboard. And that eventually grew to at the end when it's kind of getting dark and there's like one more game, somebody would pick me up. And then it grew to everybody's got to have a girl on their team. And so I always stayed on the court. And then it grew to playing a lot and the worst player being assigned to me and me embarrassing them, right? Like hitting threes on them.
That's it.
Posting them up. And so that was the summer before seventh grade. And then the summer before, after the eighth grade, so I go through middle school. I'm 5'8", so I'm this height already, and I'm tall. So I make the teams, win a low resource area. Everybody's late to sports. And 2000, summer 2000, the Olympic Games, that year, the volleyball team had the most Black girls it had ever had. And so now I see these Black girls playing volleyball and I'm like, oh man, I'd only seen church volleyball and then volleyball at middle school. And again, wait, this is their job. This is a profession. Fell in love with volleyball. Decided I wanted to do both on top of being the next Pam Oliver. I was kind of mesmerized by sideline reporting that she got to talk to the coaches and be down there with the players. And the rush of it all. And then she had her nice lipstick on and her hair flowing in the wind. And it just seemed like a cool job. So I went into high school with those three things. The main thing was I wanted to go to college. I wanted to change the trajectory of my life. There wasn't a lot of achievement in my family. So I wanted to go to college. And I was really pretty bright academically, but I thought for sure I wanted to try this sports thing in college. And so couldn't afford travel ball, any of that. Had some little peeks into AAU. I'd play a couple of tournaments. My friend's dad would coordinate a team every now and then to play. No volleyball experience. And senior year, getting a little bit discouraged. Don't really have the resources. Don't understand the process. But Texas Southern sees me at an AAU tournament, and they start calling me, and they're like, hey, you can come play here. And I'm like, great. I had the audacity to get to sports late and still have the dream of playing both in college. I really did. I said I can do both. That's and amazing. Prairie View called next and they called about basketball first. Oh man, this volleyball thing may not happen. And so I'm bold enough to ask the assistant coach, hey, has anybody ever played two sports at your school? He said they have. They haven't since I've been here, but I know they have. And I said, well, I want to play volleyball. He says, well, I'll tell the volleyball coach to call you. And praise God, the former Prairie View volleyball coach was a middle school coach who had kind of got out of it. She was an All-American track star at Prairie View, got out of it, had kids. The middle school coach saw me playing the high school that her middle school fed into and had already made a phone call to the volleyball coach. I think this kid can play here. And so get on the phone with the volleyball coach. And she says, sure, you can do it. And I wound up going to Prairie View to play basketball and volleyball. Ended high school having one of the more historic careers, most historic careers there. I think my senior year went to state in the discus. So went to playoffs, led the volleyball team to the playoffs for the first time in 13 years. Basketball had been 20 years. Went to state in the discus, had a magical senior year. A magical senior year for a school that wasn't very good in athletics. And then went on to Prairie View. And oh man, it was such a culture shock and just a shock to the system. You want me to keep going?
Yeah, you're all good. Yeah.
So get to Prairie View and just a little bit about my childhood. My grandmother actually was opposed to me playing sports. So my grandmother raised us. We were 3, 4, and 5. We went to live with my grandmother. My mom was dealing with drug addiction. So my dad was first. he left, and then dealing with the heartache of that. And then this is mid to late 80s, drugs were everywhere. She succumbed to drug addiction. So we wound up with my grandmother, and our life was church, home, school, home, right? Church, home, school, home. When I was 9 years old, in about the third grade, my grandmother made us recite a verse every day for a school year. My brothers hated it. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice
and be glad in it. Yes.
And she'd stop us at the door. Let me hear it. And I'd straighten up and say it verbatim, nice and proper. And my brothers would mumble it, and she'd let them go through. And that kind of tells the story of, she had high expectations for all of us, but she had the utmost expectations for me, and everything had to be done with a standard of excellence. And that is, I've carried that on through my life. Hey, everybody else can mumble it. I'm going to stand up.
Come on. Well,
be clear. And my church taught me that as well. My church, really, those were the first examples of public speaking. Those are the first experiences with public speaking, having a thought. So being a thought leader, right? We just went through a lesson. What do you think about this? How can you apply this? We had to do that as early as 7 or 8 years old. You got to have a thought. What do you think about this? How does this apply? And that was really great when it came to academics, and just life period, being a coach, being a leader. They really, those very early years really gave me leadership skills. Verse every day. So my brother signed up for a tournament. Our church did a tournament, and maybe we're 11 or 12. And my grandmother goes to pay the registration, and she's got her money out to pay for two kids to be in the tournament. And it's 10 bucks a kid, pays for your shirt and entry. And they go, "Oh, Sister White, you just owe us $30. No. I owe you 20. Just Quentin and Josh are going to be in there. And she's like, they're like, "No, Tamika's in it too." And she's like, "Girls can be in it." They're like, "Yeah, we couldn't tell her no. You know, girls could be in it." And so my introduction to sports, my grandmother hated it. I wore a dress or a skirt to school till I was 8 or 9. Then I begged to wear short pants. That's she called them, short pants. And that probably was capris or gauchos or something similar. But she was very, very conservative. Very, very conservative. So my life, my grandmother, and around the time she made us do this verse, and I didn't reflect on it until I wrote the book, it was a period when we didn't hear from my mom for like a year and a half, 2 years. You know, she was really bad. You know, before she fought for some years to come see us and to be in our life. And then, you know, my mom explains it. She just knew it was a fight she wasn't going to win. You know, she wasn't going to earn us back, went into a deep depression. And we didn't see her. And so looking back, although Black people didn't talk about much, you know, my grandmother wouldn't discuss it. And you almost felt like if you discussed your feelings about it, you would be ungrateful for the fact that she had kind of rescued us.
For sure.
And so instead of talking about it, I think she kind of put that verse in our heart, right? Because she knew, you know, at that point, we're starting to realize at 8 or 9, something's different about my home life and structure than other kids. And then, you know, something's missing. And so you start to have that feeling like something's missing. So she put that verse on our heart. And so that really was the lens that I saw life through, gratitude. This is going on. I need to be grateful. So I wrote this in my book. I could look around me and see that I should be grateful. But right around that same time, I fell in love with reading, and reading made me greedy. Reading is what really made me greedy, because it was like, okay, God, I don't have the usual family structure. And we were surrounded with poverty. We were working class / lower income. And so I could see you should be grateful for what you have, because some of your classmates, it's really bad. But then I started reading and I was like, God, I'm grateful, but there's a whole world of possibilities of what I could become, even from this background. And so reading has always been very instrumental in my life, very inspiring for me. one of my favorite pastimes, to be honest. It really opened up the world for me, opened up possibilities for me. So where are we at?
No, I think that's amazing. And one of the things really quick, I want to interject. I attached a lot with your story with your grandmother and then the introduction of sports, right? Because I started playing basketball being with my brother, and mm-hmm. my mom was not feeling it. Okay. It was like same thing. Like, no, you know, this is my little girl. And it wasn't in the time where it is now, where sports and women playing multiple sports is prevalent. It wasn't at that point. That's how I grew up on the cusp, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Baby. And I'm like, yeah, but I was a tweener where I still was at my grandparents' house on the weekends watching them, you know, with the pigs outside, right? And the cows and the chickens. Like, I grew up and I snapped peas, right? You know, I was on the cusp. And I'm like, so I meet you where you are, where, you know, girls playing sports, it was like, no, we're not feeling it, right? And so the other portion, though, that I love that you talk about is that in many communities, but definitely the Black community, there were things you had to hold close to your vest. It was, don't you tell this family business. What happens in this house stays in this house, right? And so in that place where you find yourself where it's like, I'm not ungrateful because I know what my grandmother's doing for me, and we're not going to really discuss where it is and what my mom is going through right now, but what she did, that's the part that really just takes me over. And ain't nothing like a praying grandmother and mother, right? That she placed a scripture in you all's heart.
Oh yeah.
Sure. That you repeated it and modeled it every single day for a reason, right? She didn't want your focus to be on the circumstance.
Correct.
She wanted your focus to be on what you could be and how to move out of that. And she did that by keeping you rooted in the word. And I think that's amazing. I want you to talk a little bit, though, really quickly, because sharing that testimony and sharing that part of your life, a lot of times in this Christian walk, in this Christian faith, I always say people want to share the glory moments, but not the story moments, right? It happens all the time. We want to put up the great picture on social media. We want to share the wins. But what we fail to realize is it's in those story moments that people truly are delivered. Can you talk to us servant leaders about the importance of being transparent in leadership, right? Because what you just did right here, you just touched on so many people that will listen to this and say, oh man, I went through the same thing with my mom or my dad or whoever. Why is it so important as servant leaders to be transparent with our story?
It gives people, other people around you, permission to be transparent and walk in their truth. I also think when you're not transparent, and I really equate transparent to being vulnerable, you miss the opportunity for an ally.
Come on.
When I've been in some professional settings, that the chip I had on my shoulder, the wall that I had up, that had helped me, has served me well. It wasn't working anymore. And I missed the chance for people to connect with me and to offer help and to be a support system. So I really, that was one of the biggest things for me, just missing that chance to allow people to help you and to be of assistance to you. It really humanizes, for serving leaders, it humanizes the position that you're in. So we think about coaches. I always cringe when you get to the part of the season in whatever sport, and we know the firings and the hirings are going to happen. And I tell people, can you imagine your job, you know, your job situation being scrolled across the bottom of a screen? This is your actual job, how you feed your family. And the way sports is here in this, in our capitalist, you know, world, you know, your job, your job literally is being scrolled across. That's like placing you in this superhuman position, you know, you're just the human. So for coaches, and I wasn't great at it, and, you know, it was due to lack of emotional intelligence. I came into coaching with passion, you know, desire to win. I had a work ethic. I wanted to work with kids. My emotional intelligence was in the toilet. But I realized if I had been more vulnerable, it would have made it more human. It would have, you know, when parents are emailing and calling you names and talking about your job and trying to take your job, maybe a little bit more transparency and vulnerability would have allowed them to see that I'm just a human. Even the kids, you know, even as a parent, I was watching a movie and it was The Photograph, and the lady in the movie, she said, you know, her dad explained it to her. The mom passed and there were so many questions about her life and who she was. And he said, she was your mother, but she was just a woman. You know, and that has allowed me to even forgive my own mother, you know, for some of her decision making and some of my coaches, you know, or people, principals you've had. And, you know, they are the leader in whatever that role is, but they're just the human. So it humanizes you, where we think these roles are like you're some superpower. It's like, no, I'm a coach. I'm going to make mistakes. You know, I'm a mom. I'm going to make mistakes. I've been through this. I'm still dealing with this. I'm juggling this. I'm trying to put this behind me. So transparency is super, super key. Yeah.
First of all, I'm just about to throw something at you. You dropped so many nuggets just within that, but I think that's amazing. I think you hit so many great points with that, because honestly, and I'm not sure, you and I were talking about this beforehand about something else before we got on, but I was like, I'm not an emotional person and I'm not really a sharer. And I've learned as a servant leader and in leadership, and as I've taken on different leadership roles in my life, that transparency truly has been key. And I think you gelled it well when you said that, one, it humanizes the position you're in. Right. One of the things that I've learned is that, and servant leaders have said in the past that I've come on, is no one really wants to and can respect you as a leader until they understand that you've been through that walk, that you understand that their walk. You know, I'm an educator. And so if a principal comes in, I've been blessed to have amazing principals, but if a principal comes in and I feel like you haven't done your time in the classroom, or I feel like you don't get down in the trenches with me, it's going to be really hard for me to, you know, meet you where you are and respect you as a leader. But when I can hear you and understand you, and when you can walk shoulder to shoulder with me and allow me to know that you went through that, that you share some of these same experiences, it does begin to humanize you. And when it does that, I can further respect you, because I feel like not only are you my leader, but I'm following someone who truly has not only my best interests at heart, but the main goal in mind at heart. But the other part that you took me out with, which was so that I had to learn, is when you said that transparency gives you an ally. That was so big, because oftentimes, especially leadership, it is lonely, right? You hear people say that all the time. But you just touched on something that is so important, is so key for our listeners now and our listeners that are going to hear this later. Transparency gives you an ally. I think that's so huge. Why? Because when we're going through a storm, oftentimes we feel that we're the only person that is currently in that storm and has ever been in that storm.
Oh yeah. You think
we're the only person? Oh no, this happened to me. This ain't happened to anybody else. But what you just highlighted, which is so important and so true, is that when you are able to be transparent, you'll find that, you know, I hate to use it this way, but it's the truism. The Me Too movement that moved over the past couple of years. I can only imagine. Yes, was that hard to share for those that do? Yes, but look what it did. You know what I mean? And so when we're able to be transparent, you start to understand, just like you said, I develop an ally. Now I have somebody who can sharpen my iron, because that's what the word says, that iron sharpens iron. And I don't think that on this pod, and if I'm wrong, my bad, y'all, I'm past speakers, but I think that's the first time that that's ever been highlighted that way. And that is amazing.
Yeah, it took me a while to learn that lesson. I mean, when I had my daughter, I was late to a district meeting. And of course, I'm that lone Black coach in a white school district, coaching volleyball and just working myself to death to not live up to some stereotypes. And I was beat. My daughter was 3 months, still waking up multiple times. And I had baby brain. And literally got to the school and forgot where we had the meeting. By the time I reached the meeting, I was out of breath and basically crying. I text my athletic director. I can hear the whole meeting. I'm sitting outside the meeting. I'm sorry. And she comes running out and she gives me this chewing out, you know, like, all you had to, you didn't even have to come. This is your fifth year in this district. You've heard it. I know you still have a young baby. You know, allow me to help you. But this hard exterior that I had built up, number one, because of my entrance into coaching volleyball, and I'll tell you that story. And then a chip that I was just born with on my shoulder and this lack of vulnerability. I was just literally trying to keep up at the pace of people who had grown kids or no kids and literally killing myself. And she, you know, from that point on, checked on me more often and kind of made me talk. And like, hey, coach, you should take a break. You should. But had I not just that day, and I almost was too late to gain an ally, right? Because it was almost too late. Had I not spoken up and just typed the words, I'm really tired. I can't come in there. You know, so that definitely humanized it for me because I was kind of like superhero running around there. So.
And I think so many of us leaders are guilty of that, honestly. You know, we walk around on a day-to-day basis with a cape, right? And it's not intentional. It just really, it comes with the territory. And we can have that moment to, you know, let the cape lie down on our backs. It doesn't have to always be in the air. And that's what transparency does, which I think is amazing. You know, one of the other portions to your book, Grateful and Greedy, talks about redefining winning, right?
Woo!
So amazing. That I'm telling you, you had me like ready. I was ready to talk to you because amazing how words take on separate meanings. And as an educator, one of the things I do each year in my AP environmental science class, I really like to open up their minds and I talk to them about certain punch words, right? About what's right, right? And they're like, right is right. I'm like, you can't define the word with the word. And I'll say, you know, define what's good. Like, what is good? What does good mean to you? And they're always lost. It's like, well, good is good. It's like the right thing to do. And then I change the pace up and I say, okay, but how would you define good versus my good? And then we use the word win. So when I saw this book written and your thought process on that, right, redefining winning, I have that conversation with them all the time about what truly justifies a win. I need you to talk to us as servant leaders a little bit about redefining winning. When you take a look at that in leadership and servant leadership, when you wrote that book, what was the spin, the thought process, and how do you put a handle on what that win really means when we redefine it as, for us as leaders?
Yeah, so I have to go back for 1 minute to talk about where I got my idea of winning.
Let's do it.
And so if you look at the dynamics of my life, low income, no parents, winning was just, and there was no achievement in my family. Winning was going to be doing more than was done before me, right? And more than that, and more than that. So winning looked like getting a college degree. Getting through high school without getting pregnant, getting a college degree, getting a good job, staying out of the criminal system. So that looked like winning for me. That I set my eyes on that. That wasn't in my household. I could see that people that had followed that journey had a pretty good life, it looked like, right? Some of the couples in my church, some of the good examples I was able to witness, it looked like that. And then having a relationship with God. So I set out to do just that, win, right? And so achievement, I started achieving things, right? I won the school spelling bee. And then, you know, I got into the honors class. You know, I was GT student and I got into honors and I graduated 10% of my class. No one had done that. And then you add in sports and I went to schools that weren't good in sports and eventually we won. And, you know, there's something to this winning thing. I'm a winner. And I became obsessed with achievement. I had a crazy drive. It wasn't like, I want to win. I want to win tomorrow. You know, I want to win today. So my drive increased for winning and achievement, multitasking. I was on the praise dance team. I was an usher. I was in the choir along with sports. And then I was on this club and that club. And so being involved in multiple things and wanting to do well in that, then you get to college. And again, after I kind of figured out where I was and got my feet up under me, winning became the focus. At first, it was just adjusting to college and the pace and the workload. And then winning got on the menu. And then guess what? I did basketball 2 years, volleyball 4, eventually let go of basketball. It was too much. And in volleyball, we won the conference tournament as a team my junior year. And then that wasn't enough for me. That summer, I worked with a guy who was an intern for the Spurs, and he was in graduate school at Prairie View. I'm like, hey, can you train me? I want to have a great senior year. Had an amazing, historic senior year. Was player of the year in the conference. And then on and on and on. Got into coaching, won very early. I went 30-8 my very first season.
Okay.
And so it went from, yeah. And so winning became synonymous with me. But not without the work, not without the work. Intense work ethic. I didn't want anybody to say they gave me anything. So crazy work ethic. And then you get, my daughter was born in 2016. And I literally, I find out I have fibroids, which is non-cancerous tumors, for anybody that's not aware. Pretty common in women of color. I found out I'm pregnant and have fibroids in the same ER visit because I am boiling up, you know, bent over in pain, and I've got fibroids the size of softballs. And so I am dealing with, number one, I am not married and I'm pregnant. So I'm 29 years old, but I am mortified because I work in a mostly white environment and I am already targeted for random things. And
you
I'm
probably
gonna show
heard your grandma in your ear. You probably heard your grandma in your ear.
I did, and I was 29.
That's right.
Guess what? Winning for me was doing everything she had ever asked me to do. My grandmother messed around and told me one day, I never worry about you. If you say you're going to do it, then you do it. Do you know what kind of pressure that is? I already did have that pressure. She was correct. She was correct. But when she told me that she noticed it, I had this other level of accountability when she told me that. And she said it and didn't blink and walked off. And I was like, oh, man. But I'd always felt that. I felt like my grandmother had 8 kids. She had raised a couple of my cousins, then us. So my grandmother raised about 20-some kids. And I had this sense that she was going all in on my raising. Like, I didn't like it all the time, but she didn't miss a beat. It was like, you had to do everything the right way. And it was like, Granny, you're like 50 years old. Like, aren't you tired of raising kids? And she had one more in her, one more in the gun. And so she kind of went, I even saw her, for me to gain some experiences, spending money that was bill money, or it was supposed to be for something else. You know, I had a sense that she was going all in. And so I needed to go all in. And, So I go a couple of months, by 5 months, I'm on bed rest. You're talking about a kid, a person that had been moving around, chasing achievement since she was about 12 years old. And I'm now 29. And I was like, I was crying when that doctor told me that I was never going home. So I had the baby. What do you mean? I got an off season to put on. I run 3 miles every couple of days. First of all, I'm in good health. What are you saying? I can't be in this room. And I was on the antepartum unit, had never heard of it, had never researched premature kids, had never done anything with fibroids. And within 5 months, my whole world was halted. And I was flat on my back with restroom to bed restrictions. No lie. Restroom to bed restrictions, cried every 3 days, and then was calling back, checking on my program. And, you know, sports here in Texas is huge. Volleyball is huge here.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
So I was 6A coach. You can equate that to a small college, the level of responsibility, publicity, all of that. And they were just kind of like, my kids were just sitting around not doing off season. No one really cared. And I remember that stinging because I had put every ounce of me into that. Every single ounce, because I felt like I was being rejected anyway. And so it breeded this obsession, which, and I didn't need anybody to make me obsessed with winning and work ethic anymore. I already came with that. And I started thinking about impact. And so I got into coaching. I took a kid home one day, many years before this, at a charter school. And when I pulled up, I realized the kid had no running water. I saw them bringing buckets from the house next door, and I saw an extension cord. I'm from the neighborhood. I figured out very quickly what was going on. It was middle of the day. Everybody's kind of sitting on the porch. No lights, no water. And I was in graduate school, just coaching there. My friend's dad called me back to the neighborhood, say, hey, you can come work a couple hours a week. You'd be perfect for this job. Changed my life, right? And I said, I'm going to be a coach. I'm going to get this MBA. Too much debt. Didn't need it. It was in the middle of the recession. There were no jobs to come out to. Hadn't done enough internships in college. I was working in the TSU athletic department. And I said, I'm going to go be a teacher and a coach. The guy I was dating at the time, he was going to be a teacher and a football coach, and got into coaching. So I knew my heart was in the right place. I wanted to make impact. Okay. So fast forward, I'm laying on my back and I'm like, well, what had I given up? What had I sacrificed for this impact that I was chasing? I had developed anxiety by 29. And anxiety. I thought anxiety was a joke. I thought it was something weak people get. I ain't gonna lie. I was like the jock athlete, but the girl version. Like anxiety. Like what? Had anxiety. Had anxiety by now. Relationship with her dad was not looking like it was gonna be promising. So I now had that on the brain. And I was exhausted, very tired. And to be honest with you, when I first found out I was pregnant and they said, hey, you'll have to take this easy the whole way, I don't know that I took that as serious as I should have. I still resorted to the thought, what will people think of me? I still need to be able to push the same workload that I could when I wasn't. Crazy. That's insane. It's insane. And so I started thinking about how all the work I had put into other people's kids. And now I was having the struggle of my life to bring in my own kid. And not that I had resented coaching. It just, I knew something had to change if I was going to stay in coaching. I even realized laying there that I had trauma that I hadn't dealt with, because when I saw that my life was different than other people's, I didn't feel sorry for myself. My tunnel got really narrow and I was like, I don't see nothing, but you got to deal with it one day. And, you know, and then that's around the time, you know, my grandmother, you know, we were introduced to Christ, and I was the first person that showed a lot of interest, and it didn't made us go to all the different Bible union and all of that, because we would just go to regular church with my grandmother. We were coming of age, and I'm like, I want to come on Thursdays to children's church. I want to be in the choir. And my brothers were, oh, they were so mad. And that started our, you know, middle of the week stuff, you know, and everybody got on board. I remember my grandmother and them weren't even going to Wednesday night Bible study then. It kind of set her on fire, like, oh, I'm going to go on Wednesdays. Y'all are going to go on Thursdays. And that was our life. But I hadn't dealt with any trauma, you know. I was introduced to God and that filled that void, is where I was going with that. I was starting to feel lonely. Things were different. You start to recognize you don't have a mom and a dad. And boom, I discovered Christ and it filled the void. And then I discovered sports and it kept me busy. And I look up, I'm 29 years old, I'm pregnant. I have a lot of anxiety. And so I said, I went back the next year, and I remember I didn't ride the bus from a trip because I needed to get to my sitter in time. Riding the bus, going back to the school, then going back, I followed the bus. And this was the advice of a non-Black volleyball coach at another school. I asked her, how are you doing this? She had just adopted a kid. She said, well, one of the things, you know, don't ride the bus, just follow the bus. She said it like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that never would have even thought of it, right? Because lo and behold, I don't follow the rule. I would just never could break the rules. And I remember they brought me in to ask me about it. And we had produced 12 college players in 4 years. This is the fifth year. We had probably 3 Division I players on the team. I ran a summer league there every summer for 5 years. Had really, really transformed it. And they asked me about it. And I remember that day, we were 14-0. We just did 2 or 3 tournaments. We're heading in the district. And I just kind of went through the meeting kind of numb, really hurt that all the things I had done, they were asking me about. Mind you, I had a premature baby, so she went through the NICU, came home great. And I decided I wasn't going back. And so I left and went to another school, had a great resume, had no problem getting another job. Did not like that other school. I was used to turning the program around. It was too many factors geographically. The kids lived 30 minutes from the school. It wasn't something I could even go get the kids. You know, when I live closer, I'm going to get you. You're on my way. The zoning was so political. It was going to be a no-win situation. And some of the adults there had succumbed to, we're not going to ever be good here. And I knew I couldn't stay. I can't stay. You know, you got to at least have some faith that we can turn it around. And one of my strategies was, at schools where kids weren't good, was to promote multi-sport participation, because I thought that accelerated your growth. Just for competing, it helped with school morale. That was one of my go-tos. If I went somewhere that wasn't good in sports, hey, y'all, let's band together. These kids need to play two or three sports. And then we're going to build some school spirit. They're going to start seeing how it's done to be an athlete, whatever, whatever. And then, so my strategy, when I get somewhere and the other coaches are like, have a losing mindset, well, I can't send these kids to you then. So I got out of there. This is a crazy story. And I opened my book with this. There's a job is open. And I had dealt with some racial undertones. I told you that it just did. When I got into coaching at that level, it was 3 in the whole city and greater Houston, 3 Black women coaching volleyball. It was traditionally white at the suburban schools. Inner city is Black Hispanic coaches. Suburbs, it was 3. And we knew each other's name. And a suburban school, it was open, the job. And they had went to the state tournament 2 years before. And I said, you know what? I started to see the end of the road for coaching. I want to go be an AD, whatever. I'm going to go try to win one more time. I'm going to ride that into being an administrator. I go and I interview. And I had actually interviewed before I got to the school that wasn't good. And they had a hiring freeze, so just moved up their JV coach. And somebody else came over to coach. So it opened up again. Should have been a sign. That lady left. And I interview and take that job. And I'm going to be the first Black coach over there. First Black volleyball coach. First woman Black coach, period. There was a Black male basketball coach. Within 2 weeks of getting that job, I get a Twitter DM from a high school volleyball account. Hey, coach, how are you? I heard you got the job at so-and-so. Do you have an email yet for that school? I'd like to email you something. I'm like, I'm not responding. What's this about? They told me not to release the news until I signed the paper. Don't respond. The person inboxes again. I start researching who the coach is. It's the Black coach. It's a suburban Black coach. So long story short, I respond. Something just tells me, hey, just see what's up. Get on the phone with this coach. She's like, coach, can you get your old job back? What? No, I can't. I resigned. They've got somebody. Goes on to tell me the school is parent run. It's nuts. She knows one of the parents that's going to give me the hardest time. Don't do it. And I'm like, this is wow. Like a movie. And it is too late. I go through a new technology. And within 2 weeks, I am dealing with crazy emails, parents walking into the gym. Oh, I'm hanging signs. Oh, I'm doing this. I'd never been anywhere parents can walk into the gym, walk into a public school, period. It was a very affluent community right outside of Houston. Half of the team parents worked for themselves, worked in corporate America. The other half parents were like, worked in the district. It was a double whammy.
Wow.
And even from how I wanted to choose captains was wrong. Coincidentally, every year their team had been senior led. The seniors were the best kids. Seniors were D1 kids. Well, that happened 2 or 3 years in a row. And when I got there, it ran out of seniors because you got a group that hadn't played in 2 years.
Gotcha.
Because every group before them were really good. Well, their parents just not having that knowledge. When we had some sophomores that were better and they played over them, that whole senior class parents just went on a tirade. And so I even had to get a protective order against a parent. It was insane.
Wow.
It was like out of a movie. It was like chasing winning. This school, you know, you can go on and see. You can research the community and tell who runs the community and what goes on there. I knew if it was a winning volleyball program, you already knew what came with it. A lot of maintenance, a lot of parents wanting to run it. A few of the girls' parents were coaches in other school districts. You knew what came with that. And then to top that off, being the first African-American, you knew what was going to come with that. So that year, I met the lady who really gave me the title for the book. Mm-hmm. And her name was Melanie. Oh, my God. Melody. Why can't I remember? Anyway. Yeah,
because that's what happens. Because you need to right now.
Melody Wyatt. And she was from Florida. And she was a PK. She was a pastor's kid. And we vibed. I was her English co-teacher. And she was probably the best English teacher I've ever seen. You have never seen somebody bring Shakespeare to life like this lady. Or Edgar Allan Poe, any of his work. She's amazing, right? And so she had this thing where if she would be complaining too much, she would say, grateful or greedy, Mel, grateful or greedy.
Wow.
Meaning reminding yourself you can only be one or the other, grateful or greedy. And I remember going through the year just like, okay, I have a job. It's crazy. Get through it, and then decide what you're going to do. And one day it dawns on me that I started considering other careers. Well, what can I do with these skills? Because by now I've been a coach 10 years and I'm talking about 10 year round school ball, travel ball, November through May. And then I worked college camps. You're talking about, I was about to die. And so, but I had a philosophy intact, you know, I could teach it to someone. I had a way, I had systems and they were effective. Kids did really well at the next level. So what do I do with these skills, God? How could you have put this on my heart to be a coach and it have gone this south? I was very confused. I was getting a little upset with God because I didn't want to be a coach. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a lawyer. Then when I got introduced to sports, I wanted to be a professional athlete. Then I wanted to be a sports reporter. And then coaching fell in my lap while I was getting a degree in business administration, which at the time I said I'll do athletic business administration. Coaching, not at all. So I'm like, God, what do I do with this? How did I get here? There's people that haven't given this profession an ounce of the work I put in. And grateful or greedy start coming in my head. Okay, you got to be grateful. You can't fuss with God. Listen, this is going south, but this is a long way from the neighborhood. You're doing a lot better than some of the people. But that's that grateful lens I was raised with. Go be a teacher. Mine then was like, oh, this is a good profession. You're doing good for yourself. You know, teacher, coach, respected profession. And I said, you know what? I thought about how did I get here in the first place? I have been the first Black in like 2 or 3 different organizations. How does that even happen? Why is that my path in this life? You know, why did God believe that I could do that? You know, this keeps being a theme for me. You know, in my family, I was the first to do a lot of things. First to go to college, get a scholarship. First to, you know, tons of things. Won the school spelling bee. First to do this. You're the first to be invited to the governor's mansion. It was either first, only, first or only, you know. And it was a theme from my life. Well, how do you live a life where you keep being the first? And I thought it's because I was greedy. I always wanted more. It was like, this is what you're going to get. And then I was like, this is what I'm going to go for. And so the title of my book, it had to be, it couldn't be Grateful or Greedy. I said the rest of my life, whatever is left, and what I'm going to preach to my kid, who is 4 at the time of the book, grateful and greedy. Like, I'm thankful for where I am, where I come from, what I have, but I want more. I want more. And so turns out the impact I wanted to make, I was thinking really small with the impact, right? And realizing that and getting back to my, I need to be greedy, is where I came up with, I'm going to go back and work in high schools, and I'm going to work at all low-income high schools, and I'm going to do it very reasonable, and I'm going to give them quality instruction. So the first service my business offered was volleyball team camps at schools that traditionally couldn't afford to bring in somebody. And then the next thing I wrote the book, and I wanted to, you know, obviously cater it to African-American women and girls. And then the coaches course, you know, I wanted to go back, and I had burnt out of coaching. I really did. And I came in with good intentions. I went hard. I produced a lot of kids, but I didn't make it. And so I knew it was because I didn't put personal development first. I knew it was because I did not put personal development first. And so my course starts with personal development and then touches on professional development. So that's kind of how I got to this point. And then when I got out of high school, Prairie View, the position was open. There were one of my student athletes. Position was open. And it just was kind of a God thing. I'd already been informally recruiting. The head coach was my former teammate on that championship team. I had sent some high school girls there. One of my recent high school girls was going. It was an easy transition while I kind of mapped out my personal business and what I wanted to do with it. But ultimately, it's college coaching, it's traveling. I have a kid, so I know that's a huge priority. So that was kind of my reasoning for, you know, kind of offboarding from that. It wasn't something I was thinking was going to be long-term because of, again, I think that would really minimize that impact, right? And if I stay and push my personal business, well, then I can impact so many more coaches, so many more young women. Go ahead, coach.
No, I just think it's golden. And I'm sitting here honestly in awe. I mean, I have been this whole entire conversation because it's amazing. You know, a lot of times individuals have these same thoughts, but they can't place the words to them, right? You know, a lot of things that I picked out, and I guess, you know, not even a teeter, because I'm going to be so excited for this amazing knowledge that, you know, I'm going to get when I play this back. But paying attention to, most of the time people take that word greedy with negative undertone, right? And you've redefined the word, explained it. One of the things that really hit me, and like, you should see how many times I circled around it over here, is that if anybody wants to be first or only, they have to be greedy. And the thing about it is, when we talk about servant leadership and leadership in general, right? The assumption is that many times we're going to be in positions where we're the first or only. But greedy comes with a work ethic. Greedy is an action word, right? It's not, granted, you can look at it and you can be like, well, greedy, we shouldn't be. No. But being greedy is equivalent to being hungry. And as you say it best, when you said you have to make sure that you sacrifice, you cannot sacrifice yourself for this image of winning. You have to understand what you're sacrificing. What are you losing, right? What is happening when you have this definition of win? But when you put that definition of greedy in there, and to those that's listening, I know it's going to hit them the same way it's hitting me, probably more profound later. But understanding what comes with the territory of being greedy. I'm grateful because I know where I was. And I know what God has now blessed me with and where he's brought me through. But see, greedy, I'm even going to put this out here. Greedy is almost, our way of thanking God for how he brought us over, right? Because here's the thing. He can bring us over and we can be content with just making it out. But what you define greedy as, is I'm going to be so appreciative that I had those but God moments, that I'm going to press forward towards the mark of the high calling, right? I'm going to move and I'm going to advance. I'm not going to stop and set my bar right here to where he allowed me to overcome. I'm going to go and say, Lord, thank you for helping me overcome. Now, let me push this up a level so that those same individuals that become my ally through transparency, look at me here, I've been listening.
Yes.
They can see that there's a threshold and we can supersede that. That was golden. Like I was sitting here in awe because that is golden. And when we look at that word greedy, even when you just kind of opened up and talked to me about your book, when we first met, it was like, huh, grateful and greedy. Who would have placed those two words together? But the fact of the matter is that greediness, and I'm going to define it with you, you defined it. I'm just placing words to it. That greediness is a way of saying, God, thank you for bringing me over. Now let me show you that I'm not going to, this, it wasn't in vain.
Yes. You put that, I need to write that down. I'm going to have to get that. No,
that was huge.
Exactly what it was. I use the quote, when you've been hurt by something, you found your problem to solve.
Come on.
And so, you know, I 10 years and all that work in the volleyball is a little bit hurt. Like, what is this about? Like, I put in the time. How could this be going south? But yeah, I think it took a lot of audacity for me to say, I'm going to go back into these places and I'm going to be transparent because I can't go. These coaches don't buy into following my lead with the courses that I create and the education and programming if I'm not transparent first. And that I didn't account for how emotional that would be because I was going to have to go revisit scenarios, right? I had to go revisit the time when money came up missing in a coach's office and I got questioned, right? And I knew I was raised to, we almost get beat to death. You could leave $20 in a house and come back and get it in 9 weeks when I was a kid. We understood stealing. That's the type of childhood I grew up. That's the type of standards, right? Mm-hmm. And to go into a setting and something's missing and somebody's looking at you, it's like, wait a minute, this is tough. You know, I had to go back to those stories. I had to go back to when my IQ was challenged or my intelligence or, you know, whatever was challenged. I had to go back there, be transparent. I had to talk about I didn't heal enough trauma before I went in to work with kids who come with their own trauma. I had to talk about the fact that I realized that the inner child in me hadn't dealt with some things. And that's why I couldn't see past some of the actions of kids. That was total transparency. So I definitely, being greedy was me saying, God, I see you. God, I hear you. And he had sent some people in my path. I remember at the very first school, before the controversial year, the athletic director, who was the football coach, came in. He said, how'd y'all do in the all-district meet? And I said, oh, we had 3 kids get awards. I got coach of the year. He said, I think you're ready for a big-time job. And this chip on my shoulder and trauma and all of this heard him telling me that it heard your work was in vain. It heard it minimized the work I had done. I was so entrenched in the work and my pride attached to the work. Here he was telling me, I'm endorsing you to go to a bigger school, a better school, or whatever school. And all I heard was trauma. All I heard was, I don't know. Your work here is, you know, I don't know what I heard, but I didn't hear what he intended for me to hear. It was a complete compliment. And I didn't hear that because of whatever was going on in my head. I couldn't relax and hear that. And that was probably God. He was telling me I was ready for big time. And I'm thinking he thinks I'm ready for a big time school. And God could have meant I'm ready for the big time, the big stage, more people. He sent that guy to tell me that and I didn't even hear it. I was just like, no, I got a lot of blood, sweat, and tears here. This is But that was that vulnerable, that grateful piece, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. When I told you, so for me, and I preach this, and I swear by this, everywhere I go is big time. And that's why I always leave it better than when I left. And I tell coaches that. I don't care if you're coaching at the middle school, in the neighborhood, across the tracks. I don't care if you're coaching at the Y. You got to treat it like everywhere you go is big time. You can't work it like I'm trying to do my best here to get here. You know what I mean? But I went to Prairie. I had no intentions to go get another job. But I wanted to work it like I was an up-and-coming assistant trying to go get a head job, right?
Yeah.
And that's how we got to do everything. And I think that's why, you know, God has always blessed me with opportunities, because no matter how small it was, no matter how insignificant a piece of the puzzle someone thinks somebody is, this kid ain't going to help us win, coach. You don't got to waste all that time on that kid. You know what I mean? Coach, this job is not going to lead to that. You don't got to do a great job there. Just get through the year. You can get here. I never thought that, because I was grateful. Again, I'm still a long ways from the neighborhood I grew up in. This is still big. Everything is big to me when I left there. And the next thing was bigger, and I was chasing the next thing. So that's kind of the lens in which, you know, I view life. But for sure, it was like, now I'm going to get everybody. And it's like, if you let me in the door, now I'm bringing everybody up with me, right? All, you know, I tell my female minority coaches, you know, Black women, we're going to the moon. Only the brightest and sharpest can go with us. Get on. Are you going to get on board? Right. And I'm telling them, you're already good enough, but invest in your personal development. That's what's going to get you on the rocket ship.
That's
You know, putting yourself first, you know, and being better for you is going to get you on. I'm not telling you need to be smarter. You need to win more games. Nothing like that. I'm telling you, focus on yourself. Gets you a ticket on, you know, on the rocket ship. For sure. I'm going back for more. And that's the greedy thing. I'm bringing everybody with me, you know.
See, and I'll bring this thing home, because I'm telling you right now, like, I already know, and I always say this, every past servant leader will definitely have my number, and the line is always open for them. But there's certain I already know that, you know, I'm going to definitely keep in contact with, for sure. And the reason being is just your outlook, right? There were so many things within that, but even just concluding them, one, okay, you made a valid point that sometimes when you talk about a chip on your shoulder, sometimes we can get so caught up in what we think and what we believe, we miss the messenger that God sent. And that was huge, right? So I wanted to pinpoint it out, because it happens all the time. Sometimes we were right off the person that God sent to answer the prayer we've been asking. Sometimes we'll compete with the person that God sent to be on our team, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we will cast out, all right? And look at that person that God sent to help us, and we talking about them and shoving them over. Oh, they don't need to be here, right? And God's like, you asked for my help, and now you're pushing the man away, you know? So just in case y'all missed that, I wanted to bring that one back through. The other portion that you talked about, it just resounded in my ear, that scripture that says, if we are faithful over a few things, he'll make us rule over many. And when you made that statement, when you said, wherever I am is big time, that's huge. So often we're so caught up and ready trying to be getting to our next and what's higher, what's best out there for me. We can't be where our feet are. We have several leaders. He's on here often. It's football season though. Coach Paul in Iowa. And he always tells us, reminds us, be where your feet are.
Mm-hmm.
We are so busy trying to step to the next stone that we can't control and be where our feet are. But you said it best, wherever I am is big time. And that's why God continued to bless you all of those years of your coaching and every aspect that you tapered in. But the last thing that was amazing, that was truly a servant leader heart, and one of the biggest steps that servant leaders have to make sure that they apply and place in their arsenal. It's not enough that you succeed. It's not enough that you move forward. It's not enough that you go higher and higher. Who are you bringing with you? Who are you bringing with you? Because here's this thing. If I'm a servant leader and throughout my whole entire life, I never build another one. We can't leave marks. How do we do that? How do I move in advance? Like the word also says, will profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? So I'm chasing and climbing to receive accolades. Who did I touch along the way? Who did I try to help pull up with me? Right? Now, it's not my job. As you say, I want everybody to get on this rocket ship. Now, I can't make you. I can't pull you and throw you on here. But I'm going to at least try to equip you with what is necessary. With my transparency, with my experiences, and even my resources, I'm going to help you to get on this rocket ship. My hope and my prayer is that you will feel enough and understand enough that you need to develop yourself accordingly to make it there. And that's a true servant leader's heart, Coach. Like, I mean, I could not have laid that out more plain, and I had to break that down because sometimes I think people truly miss the points that individuals on here speak. Like, I really, sometimes it's hard for me to facilitate and be a host because I'm sitting here like a sponge. So what you all say, and I have to snap back out of it like, okay, Chelsea, it's your turn to, you know, kind of redirect this conversation. But you were so spot on today. Like, I wish you could see my notes over here. You were so spot on today with that message, one, of grateful and greedy. You changed my whole perspective. Two, understanding that transparency is key in servant leadership, right? Because I told you about me, and I'm sure there's many of us out there that we guard our heart, we hold things close to the vest, but what we miss in that, right? But ultimately, the biggest thing that I've heard from you throughout this conversation is the true servant leader's heart that understands that every step and stage that I went through, even the rough moments that built my childhood, my foundational base, I recognized that it was all God's plan. That all things work together for the good of them that love him. And you loved him. And even those moments that were hard, you didn't let those stop you. You remembered to be grateful. And then you took it up a notch and you were greedy to show him, look, I appreciate you. And I'm going to show you I appreciate you. So, you know, as I wrap this thing up there, you're not going to get out of here because we got to enshrine. And you've been listening. See, you're a faithful listener of the podcast. So this is going to be funny. Because I know you're going to hit it out of the park. But you know that there are two pressing, consistent, and constant questions that I send to a servant leader that enshrines them in. It kind of pulls you over to this side and adds you to the servant leader family. The first one, and I'm ready for this one because patient we've had. I do my God is devotional, right? I love it. It helps ground me. It helps me to remember to be grateful, right? It helps me understand what God is and what he isn't. And sometimes, and I say this all the time, people don't realize the biggest blessing is sometimes the things that God isn't, right? But I will go through a list. I'll say God is, and I just rip off what he is. He's this, he's this, he's this, he's this, to remind me what God has been in my life, even when times get hard. Well, today you don't get a list. So if I said God is, and I drew a blank, an imaginary blank on this screen. How would you feel that blank? God is what?
God is bold.
Come on. See, I knew. Something new. I knew. Tell me why that's what came to you. God is bold, and he is. But tell me what came to you. Why was it your
choice? I think he's bold because of the extremes at which he blesses you or moves you based on, you know, what you were dealing with and how you come out of it. It's so extreme. How you've been hurt and then how he uses you is the extremes. I think God has a lot of audacity, right? To make you, I think he's bold because he's going to make you go back to things and places that hurt you, you know, and face them and be a witness there and be a leader there. I think he screams, you know, it, you know, some of the messages that he gives you, it's it's not a whisper, you know, that it's bold. The people that he sends to deliver the messages is bold. It's like you would send this message to this person knowing
you
this,
let that man tell person. Me I'm now ready.
You know, I think he's bold. That was I do John Gordon's one word for the year, and my word was bold. Nice. And I needed that to remind myself of that when I'm speaking and my messaging and trying to reach people and my actions to be bold, you know, to have audacity. You know, they use it on Facebook. Everybody got a lot of audacity right now. You know, God is bold. He's got some audacity. You know, you're like, how dare you make me have to go through this thing or to take this route? How dare you? But he's bold, you know, he wants people, and he's bold because he's using you to gain others, you know, to gain other followers of him. So bold is my word. Has anybody used bold?
No. I'm gonna throw my shoe through this laptop. I mean, come on. I can't with you. Just, and I tell people, I've been trying to be real calm here, you know, as I prepare to welcome my little girl in a couple of weeks. And y'all be trying to make me jump out this chair. I've been
really you better.
And go. Then you go and you just say stuff like that. And, you know, that's why I got to shut it down. That's why you're my last call right there.
Yes.
But no, I think that's amazing. And he is, right? He makes no... It's not even accidental. Like, yeah, I'm going to be bold. Yes, this is how I'm doing it. Yes, I'm coming straight out the gate, right? I'm doing my best stuff. Like, I'm not coming mild, lukewarm. I'm coming straight out of the gate. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? That's amazing. It's almost like that kid, you know, first day of school, the first week's trying to wear their outfits and they try to save the best, harvest them for later. It's like, no, I'm coming out with my best fit every single time. That's God.
Oh, yeah.
With you.
Oh, yeah.
I can't with you. And this is a servant leader coach's Bible study, where servant leadership is at the forefront, the middle, the core, all around what we do. I tell people all the time, the main focal point why God gave me this platform is because we talk about servant leadership. We talk about how individuals should lead like Christ. But we fail to realize, do they know what that means? Do they know what that looks like? Right? So servant leadership, two words that take on so many different meanings. But to you, servant leader, Tamika Newman, servant leadership, what does servant leadership mean to you?
Servant leadership to me is, and I recently changed this, and it's being the guide. Before I go on with the rest, I emphasize the guide because my way of being a servant leader was to be the hero. Mm. It was to be the hero. I was going to save people from themselves. And I was going to give of myself till I had nothing left to give. And that has changed for me through personal development and being in the word, in that I am the guy that leads individuals to knowing, understanding, and continuously improving self. Right. I'm putting it on it. I'm the God. I'm going to help you get there. I'm going to help you see how to do it in order to gain power and freedom over your life.
Come on.
And I think that's so freeing for people. It's freeing for me. Before I was so bogged down with trying to be a servant leader, the way I was trying to lead, it was bogging me down trying to do it that way. So I really focused on, I can't be your hero. I can be the guide. And I can be the guide by the example that I show, right? The path that I am laying out for you, should you follow it. And that's the biggest way, is the path that I follow, that I leave for you, the trail that I leave for you, the resources that I provide, the awareness that I help you to come into about yourself, the inspiring you, motivating and pushing you. The transparency allows me to be the guide, because if I'm transparent, then you'll follow if I'm transparent enough. And then to gain power and freedom over your life goes back to my redefining. You can define what this life looks like for yourself, right? Even in your walk with Christ, I remember it was, when we were young, it seemed like it had to be so rigid. Mm-hmm. There was no freedom for you to choose. If you didn't choose right, then the cycle of you feeling guilty and drained and like a bad person. It was just a constant cycle. And now it's, you know, you got to choose the path yourself. You got to know yourself. You got to always be working on yourself. And because you're working on yourself and you know yourself, nobody can have power over me. Nobody. You know, I think Les Brown said, well, if there's no enemy within, there can be no enemy without. Right. So dealing with yourself. I want to say that's an African proverb, but understanding and knowing yourself. Before I got into working with kids, and I preach that to coaches, you need to know yourself. Your self-awareness is key. There's no way you can go in and work in public service, period, with kids, with sick people, with old people, knowing yourself, because you're about to take on a lot of stuff. About to take on people's concerns, people's fears, people's their baggage, their challenges. And so knowing yourself is key. And then what you know about yourself, nobody can hang it over your head. And that's big for Christians. You know, it's like, can I live boldly for Christ? Well, there's some people that went to college with me and I wasn't exactly, you know.
Yep.
My old hangout happy hour crew is not going to be buying this Christian thing. But long as you know yourself, you know your challenges, your struggles, and you're continuing to improve, you know, your walk with Christ, then nobody can listen. I got power and freedom over my own life. And so there's so much joy that comes with that. And that's just how I'm living the rest of my life, grateful and greedy, and then redefining what it means to win for myself. And so now I don't have the pressure of that winning athletically getting in the way of that winning, because it's hard not to. I want to win, but now my wins look a little bit different. You know, some of it comes with, you know, winning the day with my kindergartner. winning the day with myself. If I said I was going to pray, meditate, run, and get 5 tasks done, did I do it to the best of my ability, or whatever that is, you know.
I can't with you. Like, I mean, you come on here and, oh, I'm so honored and just so meek. And then you come dropping all these bombs, whatever, you belong. Okay. I'm blown away. I mean, I truly am. And I'm not surprised. I'm really not. As I told you, God has a way, right? And if you lead him, if you let him lead and you just follow what he asks you to do, right, everything is going to work out. And this was by God's design that we connected and that you came on here, because your message today of not only grateful and greedy, but the importance of transparency. And the last key piece of that was new as well in servant leadership. I can't be your hero, but I can be your guy. I'm like, for real? That's what we doing? Like, that's what we doing. Like, I'm sitting here, okay, which one of these is going to be her episode title? But no, in all seriousness, just the way God has his hand on you and that you allow him to move you how he wants. That's the key piece. God has his hand on all of us, but he's also, Steve Harvey always says, God is a gentleman, right? He's not going to pray for you. He's not going to, he gives you free will.
That's good.
On all of us, and he has his hand on you, but you allow him to move you. And that is evident in everything that you do, that is evident in what you speak, even the words that you say boldly to make us better. So I thank you. I truly do. I thank you so much just for, one, I told you your time, but two, your authenticity and your transparency, but three, legit making us better. Like, I know well, one, I always listen to the previous one the next morning. Like, this is always my next morning, right? When I'm getting ready for work, that's what I'm listening to.
Oh, nice.
You know, like how much you pull me now, but when I can be a listener in the morning, I already know I'm about to be sent through the roof, right? But truly, I just thank you for the woman of God that you are, being bold enough to just speak about your experiences so that we can learn to walk boldly. We can be grateful, and we can also be greedy.
Yes. I want to acknowledge my student athlete,
yeah, for sure.
Itchit. She's so awesome.
Shout out to you, Sanaa.
Yeah, one of those kids you meet that you know that you're gonna love forever. She's great.
I love it. Girl. And there's true flowers being sent, true evidence of a servant leader is when you move on in a location, in a separate location, but you've left imprints with individuals that you led. Proof is in the pudding right there. And so Coach, thank you so much just for being here today. I'm gonna let you say any last encouraging line word that you want to say to our listeners before we plug off for the day.
I don't know. I talked.
Well,
so
I know.
Much.
I'd be surprised if you have anything else. You just all the bombs. I mean,
I do not. I can't wait to hear how you guys are redefining winning for yourself.
I love it. Look, and I mean that. So, of course, naturally to our listeners and you all, it's been amazing to read your thoughts and to read your reviews. When you listening to this podcast episode, I don't know what I'm gonna call it yet, y'all. It'll have a time it reaches some of you all's ears. But drop a review. Let Coach Tamika know how you're redefining your winning. How are you being grateful and greedy? And how transparency worked for you, And before we go, as always, Coach, if you don't mind, do you mind giving us a prayer to close out today?
Oh, okay. Lord, we thank you for bringing us together today on this podcast to talk about being a servant leader. For you, Lord, thank you for the impact that it will make. Just open the hearts and the ears and the minds of the individuals who will hear this message. Lord, let it resonate to them. Let it make it their own. And we ask that you just be with us, live through us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen and amen again. Coach, we thank you big time. We thank you all for listening. Those are listening now, those that will listen on this podcast. More than anything, as we start to kind of close out, I just want to encourage everyone to recognize exactly what she said, which was amazing, right? We can be grateful, but we can also be greedy. We're grateful that God has allowed us to be able to see the other side, but let's be greedy and let them know that wasn't in vain. So we thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye. Bye.